Good afternoon, everybody. It is April 4th, Monday. It happens to be 3:07 p.m. And welcome to Rules. And we're going to actually...
If you would start with the work session and open for the possible introduction.
Okay. Going to open up a work session for possible introduction.
Mr. Chairman, you have legislative draft 4056. This is a... concurrent resolution that would welcome the professional soccer team, the Portland Timbers. Needs to be introduced if you wish to have it on the floor.
Representative Berger. You look like a soccer fan.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
You could write volumes about what I don't know about soccer.
Okay.
I move, however, that legislative draft 4056, dated March 29, 2011, be introduced as a committee measure.
Representative Berger moves that legislative draft 4056, dated March 29, 2011, to be introduced as a committee measure. Discussion. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I always like to make the disclaimer that you've all heard before, that support for the introduction does not imply support or opposition to anything introduced as a committee member, as a committee measure.
Including the support of soccer.
Representative Garrett was...
Oh, that was a private comment, so... I'm not sure it's on the record.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not very well known here, but I used to be the president of the Lane County Soccer Referees Association, and I do know what the rules of soccer are. I suspect I'll be not only voting to introduce this measure, I suspect I will be voting to ascend it to the floor. But, of course, that awaits the hearing.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, any objection? Seeing none. So moved. And... so close the work session on the introduction, and we are going to open a work session on House Bill 3074.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3074 directs the Secretary of State to develop an electronic voting system. You have the Dash 2 amendment, which replaces the measure. It allows all long-term absentee voters to cast ballots by electronic mail if they include the return identification envelope and a waiver of right to secret ballot. It makes the provisions operative January 1st, 2012. It declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Mr. Chair.
I would move the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3074.
Chair Hunt moves the Dash 2 amendments to 3074. Is there any discussion?
I'm just trying to make certain that I remember correctly what the difference between the Dash 2 and the Dash 3 is.
I'd be happy to speak to that, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
So the Dash 2 amendments, as you may recall in the testimony we received from Legislative Council and the Secretary of State's office, both, I think, anytime that we are, under federal law, anytime that we are applying voting by another means, voting by any means, whether it's the current statute of a fax machine, whether it's through electronic mail, which I should distinguish, electronic mail is not online voting or anything like that. It's sent through a secure email that's actually an attached PDF document. But any time we extend the new mechanism like that, we've been advised by counsel that under federal statute, we have to apply that not just to any one category of voters who are out of the country, but to all categories of voters who are out of the country. So I think that shows up. Let's see.
Yeah.
It's right here.
Actually... yes. If you remember, Gina, when she was in here from Legislative Council, described a little bit for
this is
the Legislative Council opinion regarding that.
Right. Okay.
Well, and if
so,
I may, Mr.
So I might just say one other thing. So the Dash 3 amendments try and carve out just two of the three pieces of those out-of-country voters, whereas the Dash 2 amendments treats them all equally.
Yeah. That's line 9 and 10 on page 1. of the dash 3 that's absent from the dash 2.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the reminder.
Steve, would you be interested in coming up and ask just a couple questions of you regarding this? There's been... Well, we did get up here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve Trout, State Election Director.
Thank you. There's been a little bit of concern with... We tried to focus specifically toward the military here initially. I mean, that was what the intent was through the dash ones or through the bill. And then we had to shift gears with the dash twos, and then we tried to bounce back with the dash threes here. The concern being is that if I'm in the military and I'm over in, let's say, Baghdad, what prevents anybody else there registering and being able to vote there at this time right now?
So, Mr. Chairman, let me see if I understand the question. So, a Oregon resident that is in Baghdad at this time, or is that who you're talking about?
I'm just going to open up to anybody to to make an attempt to do this.
Well, I mean, they would have to be an Oregon, have Oregon residency, and then be there, but then whether they're in the military or not, they would be treated the same under the Uniform Overseas Civilian Absentee Voting Act, which is federal law.
Okay, and they would have to be obviously registered here in order to be able to vote.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have Representative Wingert?
Well, I was going to wait till we had the full bill, but while I got you up here, I have received some emails of concern about the bill, and I just want to restate what I believe the bill does and have you confirm or deny that. So currently, people who are overseas can fax their ballot in. And what I believe we're doing with this bill is simply allowing them to email, rather than faxing the ballot in, they could email a copy of the ballot in. So it's essentially an electronic, it's just another way of faxing it in. You just do it through email rather than over a fax machine, which doesn't seem like it's that big a deal to me. I mean, the idea, if you're already allowing people to do it by fax, to simply allow them to do it by email is just another mechanism for them to be able to deliver it over the wire to us. Does the bill do anything more than that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wingert, that's my understanding of the bill, that it's just another means of transmission of the ballot, and once it gets to the county election official, we'd be treated the same as a fax ballot.
Follow-up.
Proceed.
Right, and so whether it comes in by fax or by email, you have a process of verifying the signature, which you go through, whether it comes in by mail or this overseas process. So we're already allowing this by fax. You have a process for verifying the ballot once you receive it by fax. And what this bill is doing is simply allowing someone who may not have access to a fax machine but may have an Internet connection to do it that way.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wingert, absolutely.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Which then, thank you, Mr. Chair, begs the question, how do you verify signature on an email?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, so as with the fax, they have to sign a facsimile. They print out a copy of the ballot envelope, which has all of the waivers and attestations and all of that. They sign that, scan it, and then that's returned with the ballot. So then we'll take that copy of the envelope that also has to come through that email. We'll verify the signature that we have in OCVR with the signature that comes through with that email to validate that that is that person.
Just to confirm then, they would need not only an email, a computer, but a scanner in order to return their ballot, because that has to be a scanned, sent document.
Mr. Chairman,
there is no other way to get there.
That's my understanding. Is that it has to, that's the only way I know how to do it.
Thank you.
In fact, I read an article this morning on Election Line with, you know, asking that question, and it's like one of the military people said, I had access to a scanner, but didn't have access to a fax machine, because apparently that's one of the tools that they actually have in the military more than they have faxes. And so, as I believe I was discussing with Representative Barnhart, this is going to be an improvement. More people will be able to access this, but by no means is this a cure-all for all of those military voters.
Yeah. One more follow-up, because so the actual email would go back to their county, would it not? Or would it go to you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, it would go to the county.
Which means that rules would have to be written about the counties not accepting it without a signature.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, those would be modeled on, if not identical, and I would imagine would be identical, just off the top of my head, to those rules that we currently have for faxed back ballots.
Okay, just confirming.
Representative Wingard.
Thank you, but just one more follow-up. So I want to be clear what I said. This is not an emailed ballot, but they would use email to send you the attachments, which would essentially have been what they would have faxed you, which is this ballot coming back and their signature. Right now they're allowed to fax that in. They could, under this bill then, scan it as a PDF or something like that and use the email system to deliver you that attachment in the same way they would have done with a fax machine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wingard, that is correct. It's just a method of transmission.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Hey, Steve, thank you very much. That has cleared up a lot for me. Thank you. Okay. Is there any objection to dash two amendments? Seeing none. So moved.
Mr. Chair?
Sure, Hunt.
I move that House Bill 3074, as amended, be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman.
Ah.
If I might.
And
a referral.
That the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you.
Okay. When in doubt, read the script.
Okay. Chair Hunt moves House Bill 3074 as amended with a due pass recommendation that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Okay, Amy, if you want to call the roll, please.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
House Bill 3074 passes, and close the work session on that.
Carrier?
Representative Wisden and I are the sponsor of the bill.
Okay.
I can either do it by myself or okay. We can do both.
No, I think you would enjoy with you.
Okay.
Co-chair. So it'll be Chair Hunt and also Representative Wisden. Okay, let's open up a public hearing then on HJR 38. Jim?
Mr. Chairman, HJR 38, upon approval by the people at the November 2012 general election, amends the Oregon Constitution to provide for review and approval of administrative rules by the Legislative Assembly. The approval would be required of any rule or rules identified in a petition with at least 10,000 signatures filed with the Secretary of State. Approval would be in the form of a mandatory Senate bill receiving a mandatory hearing and mandatory floor vote, then subject to the same requirements as any bill for enactment. Any administrative rule failing approval is disapproved, and any replacement rule on the same issue is subject to approval during the following legislative session without the requirement of a new petition. If the replacement rule fails approval, any further replacement rule on the same issue is of no force or effect until such time as it is approved by the Legislative Assembly.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. You have in front of you a resolution that would allow the people of the state of Oregon to weigh in a little bit on administrative rules. I tried to craft this originally that administrative rules that we disagreed with, as we know, we have certain intent in the legislative body, and sometimes when the administrative rule comes out, it's completely contrary to the intent that we started with. So I tried to get that crafted to where it would come in front of us, but found some roadblocks of, like the Constitution, so minor detail. But the people can. That's what's interesting. They can bring that back in front of us, and we would take a look at it. Now, this is pretty basic rule that a resolution that if the people find out that there's administrative rules that's contrary to what our intent was, they can, in fact, get 10,000 signatures, bring it back, and then it's forced on the Senate to comply with at least a hearing and a vote. After that, it's kind of it's on its own. But at least we have that much. Now, the fiscal on this would be very interesting to see what staff would do with it. It could be very high if they wrote a lot of administrative rules that didn't comply with our wishes. Or it could be nothing. It'll depend upon what the staff does. I don't know if any of you have, but I know I have had bills that have certain intent, and when you read the administrative rules, it's completely different than what our intent was. So that's it in kind of a nutshell of what this bill is about. Any questions?
Members, any questions? Representative Wingert.
Mostly, Representative Esquel, it's a thank you for bringing this idea forward. I've heard other members talking about this from before I was even in the legislature, and I certainly share the concern about how the administrative rule process tends to get away from us after we empower those agencies. And having some mechanism for requiring them to bring their work product back before us, which is supposed to be a work product based on the laws that we passed in the first place, bringing them back for a look at how that all ended up getting written, I think is extremely important. I think it's important for the democratic process that the elected representatives see ultimately what the agencies and the bureaucracy has done with the instructions that we gave them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wingert. I'm going to give you the best example that I can possibly think of. And that was Senate Bill 100. Senate Bill 100 had a certain intent, and I'm going to kind of quote what Governor Attia said. We created land conservation and development. And I believe Representative Garrett was in the same hearing when he spoke on this. He said, we remembered the conservation, but we forgot the development. And a friend of mine who was a planner for the city of Medford for 28 years said when he first started, there was three-ring binders that had the state of Oregon rules and regulations outlined on for Senate Bill 100. When he was ready to retire, which has been probably 7-8 years ago, he said you could fill his office, which was about a 12 by 20, clear the ceiling, which was a 10-foot ceiling, and go down the hall with all the rules and regulations, administrative rules that we had created, and he said he would defy one person to understand all those rules. So we kind of created ourselves a problem, whereas we as legislators were in the unfortunate positions of where we had to rely upon staff to create the rules, and yet there was no check and balance. So that's kind of what this actually started. This was the testimony from Governor Attia, because he was on the original committee for Senate Bill 100.
Further question, Representative Garrett? Did you have your hand up?
My question was answered.
Okay. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious who is going to define expeditiously. Is it defined in the bill?
Not that I can recall.
I don't think so. I think what we'd like is to have a
little... It has to go to the next session. I know that.
Representative Holby? Can you pull your mic over toward you, please? Thanks.
That was the extent of my question.
Any further questions? Representative Barnhart.
A matter of inquiry, do we have other witnesses?
We do. We have four witnesses.
Then I'll hold my question for that.
He's saving the tough questions for the witnesses. You get off easy, Representative
Esquel. There you go. Now I get to go back to Ag and Natural Resources.
Well,
that was my point, of course. I wanted him to get back to committee work. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much
Thanks.
For bringing
go take care of the cougars and the wolves, okay?
There you go.
All right.
I'm going to take care of the wolves.
So let's bring up Ruth Bendel and Janice Deisinger. Welcome back to the Rules Committee.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ruth Bendel, 10980 Southwest Muirwood Drive, Portland 97225. I have questions with regard to this House joint resolution. For one thing, is this reserved just for new bills and therefore new administrative rules that are coming forward now to relate to bills that are coming forward, or is this does this pertain to administrative rules that are frustrating people and have done so for years, perhaps, and there's been no way out? I'm saying this because I have attended administrative rule hearings, and you speak and you express your concerns and they thank you, and then nothing is done about it. So I'm sure that if you could go retroactively to things that are already horrifying you that are in place and do it, I think that there would be an extreme interest. My next question is, what kind of time frame does one have for collecting the 10,000 signatures? I mean, is there a sort of cut-off, okay, you've got X number of months, days, weeks to come up with those signatures, or otherwise that administrative rule is rendered harmless?
I don't want to put you on the spot, Mr. Sandbridge, but at least in terms of the first question, maybe both questions. Can you address those?
Mr. Chairman, it appears to me that if you look on page 2, starting with line 8, it says the Legislative Assembly shall review and approve an administrative rule or rules upon filing of a petition with the Secretary of State that has been signed by at least 10,000 qualified voters. It does not address how long the rule has been in existence, whether it's a new rule or an existing rule. It looks to me like any rule. There may be some other wording elsewhere in the measure that limits that, but it looks to me like it would be any rule. And I don't see any time limit on collecting of signatures either. This is the sort of thing such a similar to initiative petitions where the a statute would define some of the parameters here.
Okay.
Ms. Bendel?
My next point is that I think requiring 10,000 signatures for that process, I think if you already get 1,500 signatures, 1,500 people feel the need to get this particular administrative rule looked into, I should imagine that would be plenty, because 10,000 signatures is a costly thing. It's time-consuming, and as important as something is, I think that's over the top. So I would hope that that could be amended and reduced, because I think this bill is long overdue. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Janice.
Co-chair Chair Hunt, excuse me, and co-chairs Hovey and Berger, I want to thank you for letting me be here along with the rest of the members.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Janice Deisinger, 32235 Southeast Pipeline Road in Gresham, Oregon. And I want to say that I'm in favor of this bill, and I agree with some of the concerns that Ruth had. I just wanted to say that I appreciate our form of government that has three branches. And in order to keep this legislative body relevant, we need to assure that the people's laws are not overruled by the executive branch through administrative rules. I brought before this committee my concerns about the ballots not being destroyed on election night, and this was done through administrative procedures, and it was cause for great concern for many of the citizens. I just want to say that in order to secure that the power stays equal between the three branches of government. I'd really like to just thank you for bringing, having this brought forward, and please consider it and pass it along with these concerns being addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either of these witnesses? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Would invite forward Andrea Meyer and Cappy Eaton.
Good afternoon, Chair Hunt, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU. Do I need to put this one? This is a different microphone. Does it need to be closer?
Closer.
So that I can do that. Here today in opposition to HJR 38. And having listened to the testimony, one of the things is that rulemaking is currently an open process with public hearing and opportunities for Oregonians to work with public agencies to craft the rules. Chapter ORS 183 sets forth in more detail than I was going to read this afternoon or read to you this afternoon the process, including how individuals can become interested parties and receive notice on an ongoing basis from any agency that they want to monitor, or an ability with specific legislation and rulemaking going forward. I have partaken in that particular process with the prescription drug monitoring program and am dutifully monitoring it. I have, like the rules allow, participated and made public comment in the commission that was formed to draft and seek ideas on the rules, and then I submitted comments on the administrative rules. There's obviously a judicial process as well. So if the rules are contrary to your intent, and as Representative Esquel said, it allows Oregonians to deal with it, I think there is the tool here through the executive branch process and the administrative rules process. HR 38 would allow a relatively small number of voters to send any and all state agency rules into limbo, because if you look at the way this is drafted, it doesn't require the legislature to take any action, and as such, non-action puts the rules in limbo. And then if the agency attempts to reformulate the rules, which they're authorized to do, anyone can, I believe, in reading the constitutional amendment, seek redress before the courts, at which point I believe this HR 38 clarifies that the court should give extreme deference to the individuals seeking to challenge the rules in balancing whether or not they're identical, similar, or as such. So I don't know how agencies are going to actually operate. If a administrative rule challenge is filed in this session, even if it were January, my reading of this is it would be set for the next session to be acted upon. Okay. So how does an agency operate its administrative rules, whether we like them or not, in a timely manner? In addition, there's a balance of power and a separation of powers. I think it was touched on, the three branches. The agency rulemaking falls under the executive branch. And ultimately, this legislature continues to have the statutory authority. If you don't like the administrative rules and they aren't doing what you thought the statute made crystal clear, you come back in and make that statute even more crystal clear. Now, it may be a surprise to some of you, and I thought I only would get to testify about Article 1, Section 8 having been voted on multiple times, but indeed, this issue has been before the voters three times. In 1996, there was a legislative referral with a similar proposal. It failed by 72%. In 1998, it was Measure 65, and it failed. It was an initiative process, so you've had the referral and you've had the initiative process twice. In 1998, it failed by 52%, and then in 2000, which in my quick review of the 2000 version is identical. I may have missed a comma or a period somewhere, but is identical to what you have before you. So I think it's fair to say voters have spoken on this issue. They have been asked, three times in recent history to consider this proposal. Now, who else joined the ACLU in opposing these ballot measures? I reviewed the voter pamphlet statements for just 2000 to get a sense. We were not alone. Former Senator Mark Hatfield, former Governor Vic Atiyah, the sheriffs from Clackamas County, Multnomah County, Benton County, and Douglas County, Oregon farmers, Oregon nursery owners, commercial fishermen. There was a broad base of Oregonians who spoke on this issue in terms of communicating to the voters positions and concerns they had from their different perspectives, and Oregonians rejected it. We urge you not to send out another constitutional referral to voters when they've clearly spoken on this issue. Representative, you missed my whole testimony. So with that, I'm happy to answer any comments or questions. Thank you.
Okay. Captain.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Chair Olson, for the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm going to be brief. We oppose this for several reasons. The first is that the Oregon Constitution is the basic framework for the government. This is extraneous material, and we don't feel it should be in the Constitution in any event. Some of these points have already been made. It appears to violate the separation of powers between the legislative branch and the administrative, the executive branch. The timelines for any kind of expeditious review are elongated from one session to another, and in the meantime, as you've been already told, the implementation of whatever the enacted law is in limbo. There are costs associated with this particular proposal. There are costs for getting 10,000 signatures in the first place. Then there's cost to the Secretary of State's office for the verification of whatever number of signatures there are to make sure that there's 10,000 of them. And then there are costs to the agency itself because it has to defend it, its administrative rules before the legislature when it finally gets heard. And so there are costs to the legislature for the time and effort in having to review whatever rule or rules come before it. And this is not necessarily part of or should be part of their regular operation. So there are many other means by which there's a more efficient way of dealing with changing administrative rules. I, too, have been part of the public process, which is very open when an agency is proposing an administrative rule or rules. They are sent out broadly. There are opportunities for public comment. There's opportunities for challenge. We do not believe this is a necessary piece of legislation. It certainly shouldn't be in the Constitution, and we ask you not to move it forward. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to testify in regards to HJR 38? Okay, seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on HJR 38 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 273A.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 273A reduces the maximum penalty for registration for registered lobbyists who fail to file timely expenditure statements. It reduces the penalty from $5,000 to $1,000, the maximum penalty.
Do we have anybody that's interested? Okay. Well, of course, Ron.
Good morning, sir. Or afternoon. My name is Ron Burson. I'm the executive director for the Ethics Commission, and we're here to support this bill. And just to expand on the bill, it's it's not just the penalties for lobbyists or the entities that hire lobbyists, but it's also for the penalties that come about for late filings of statements of economic interest. The penalties are a simple math equation that's in the statutes currently. You get penalized $10 per day for the first 14 days you're late and $50 thereafter. What the commission has found in practice is these $5,000 penalties are pretty steep and garner a lot of work on the commission's part to try to work through this penalty phase. As I say, with the lobbyists and the entities that hire those lobbyists, these are quarterly reports. If a lobbyist fails to register an entity, let's say, that entity could have a couple, two, three quarters go by before they figure it out, because unless the lobbyist tells us that they're lobbying for that entity, we don't send the reports out to that entity. So what we found is quite a few clients of lobbyists and lobbyists themselves and SEI filers come before the commission. The commission has struggled with these high penalties. They have used their kind of the authority that the legislature gave them a few years back for some type of letters of education for first-time offenders, but it's really been pretty difficult on us. So we support this bill in basically leaving the math equation the same, but it tops out at $1,000 to $5,000.
Any questions? Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure whether this is a question of the witness or staff. I'm looking at Section 2, which I guess is on the second page. And in line 8 in the current law, 171.992 sub 1, there is a penalty of not more than $5,000 for violations of things in that subsection. The change, if I found it all, is in subsection C on line 18, where it reduces the penalty from $5,000 to $1,000. I'm curious how those two provisions hook together and what we're actually changing.
Do you want me to answer that?
Proceed.
Chair Olson, Representative Barnhart, what I'm talking about is the simple penalties for late filing. What you're looking at in that section is when people fail to register their clients, they are actually subject to an ethics violation for doing that, or for not registering themselves as a lobbyist. And so that amount, the maximum for an ethics violation, is at $5,000. What I'm talking about is simply filing late, and that is not addressed in that section. The late filings, again, are that math equation I talked about earlier. For the first 14 days, you get $10 a day and $50 a day after, and it tops out at $5,000. So that's the difference between the two sections, and we're not looking to change the maximum for ethics violations.
It's
Representative Berger.
So it's the late filing that's the. But. Okay. I need to look up what statute.
Well.
I'm with
Representative Barnhart.
Yeah.
Well, I think actually, you know, looking at Section 2 and then Sub 2, A, B, and C, that all plugs into supporting with what Ron's saying right now.
No. Are we in the A engrossed?
Yeah, that's A engrossed.
All right. Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to go back and look at the statute as a piece, because it's hard to figure it out from here. Maybe I can ask a question this way. What's the difference between failing to file and then figuring it out in a year and then filing and filing late? Because that sounds to me like they're the same thing.
Chair Olson, Representative Barnhart, if you meet the thresholds of lobbying in the state of Oregon, you're required to register with us. And maybe I'm confusing filing and registering with the state of Oregon. If you're also an entity that hires lobbyists in the state of Oregon, you are required to register with the commission. And then each quarter, you report the expenditures that you lobbied or an entity had paid a lobbyist.
Okay.
And so what I'm talking about is those quarterly filings. The initial registration, if you do not register in the state of Oregon, that, that is actually an ethics violation, and it, and that's what those statutes are referring to in Section 2 there. It's about the registering of a lobbyist or registering as an entity that pays a lobbyist.
Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, that helps a lot, Mr. Okay. Chair. Could I ask another question?
Go ahead.
Thank you. This is not related at all to the statement of economic interest that we are all filing in the next few days. Is that a, that's a different part of the statute, I assume.
Representative Olson, Representative Barnard, the penalty is for the statement of economic interest. And I appreciate you saying that you're going to file in the next couple of days.
Well, actually, I thought, on the 15th. I thought I'm on my track yesterday.
But it would also, that same math equation goes for late filing of statements of economic interest also. And it can top out at $5,000. This bill would reduce that penalty, or it would max out at $1,000 for late filing.
Thank you.
Of a statement of economic interest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think so, it's clarified. I appreciate that.
You're feeling better, Representative.
I understand
feeling
what
better.
The bill does now, and I didn't before.
Okay, that's good. Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none. Oh, Chair Hunt.
Let me just make sure on the last point. If someone files but contains maybe intentionally leaves out information out of their report and then comes back and files the correct report late, would that be I'm just wanting to make sure we're not creating a path where it's just counted as a late report as opposed to counted as a intentionally inaccurate report.
Chair Olson, Chair Hunt, the scenario that you describe is not a late filing penalty. That is nothing, actually an ethics violation to incorrectly file your report. And so because you gave the information correctly at a later point, that would be something that the commission would consider in sanctioning you for that violation. But all I'm talking about is the simple late filing penalty. So it's not a way of getting around that. If you actually file timely but file incorrect information, you would be subject to an ethics violation for that.
Thank you.
Jim.
Mr. Burson can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you look at the A engrossed version of the bill on the second page, under Section 2, starting on line 10 on the second page, you'll see that that's a paragraph 2 that relates to the statutes ORS 171.745 or 171.750. That's where the 5,000 is being changed to 1,000. And if you would like, Mr. Chairman, I can get, I'll bring copies of that statute and of those two statutes and get them around to the members for clarification.
Thank you.
It's also on page 2 on page.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate that. Anybody else like to speak on the Senate bill? Okay, hearing none, we're going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 273. And just for everyone's information, we are moving House Bill 2804 to Monday, the 11th. And we will open a work session on House Bill 3357.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3357 requires the Secretary of State, when adopting administrative rules, to adopt the rules within 90 days.
Okay.
And you have an amendment that removes the time limitation. The 90 days had to do with 90 days after the law requiring the rule became operative. Your amendment, the dash 1, removes that time limitation. It requires the Secretary of State, when adopting administrative rules applicable to an upcoming election, to adopt those rules expeditiously.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3357.
Chair Hunt moves the dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3357. Is there discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none. So moved. Chair Hunt.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3357 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Chair Hunt moves House Bill 3357 as amended to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Amy, if you call the roll, please.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Excused.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hunt?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
House Bill 3357 is amended. Passes. Who would like to carry that?
I'll carry it.
Okay, Representative Berger. Okay. Work session on House Bill 3357 is closed, and we are adjourned. Yep.